Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We like hanging out with you. Folks, once again, university professors are standing up for one another. We appreciate that. It's an important thing. Help us talk about this. We've got Mark Clout. He's a spokesperson for APSCUF, which is the Association of Pennsylvania State College and University Faculties. Mark, welcome to the Union Edge.
Thank you, Charles. Let me just clarify. I'm from Lock Haven, PA, and I'm a spokesperson for our particular chapter here.
Okay.
And we're among 14 state universities in Pennsylvania that are all out on strike today, regrettably. And we represent about 5,500 faculty, about 233 faculty here in my own institution. And so I wanted to sort of get that clarified a little bit, and I'm glad to speak with you and giving us this opportunity to chat.
Thank you for the clarification on that. Mark, APSCUF faculty or members are out on strike. What was the sticking point, and how long have you been trying to resolve this?
Right. So we have been negotiating for approximately 2 years. We've been without a contract for about 460 plus days. Under Pennsylvania state law, we can remain under the previous contract as long as parties bargain under good faith. And it was just got to the point where it wasn't moving. We had, before we had even thought of considering a strike date, we had offered to the administration a resolution by binding interest arbitration. And so certainly our hope there was where you get it to three independent arbiters, and you know, we each put our best proposal out there, and it would have, we'd have, both sides would have to live with that outcome. And but the state system of higher education, which is in Pennsylvania representing these universities, these are state-owned universities, I should say. Mm-hmm. So they are different than Penn State and Temple. We have Lock Haven and Shippensburg and Millersville. These are all, originally they started off as state teachers' colleges that developed into something more. So anyway, back to the story. We've been negotiating. We offered binding interest arbitration, and they had turned us down. So then we felt we had to go forward and set a strike date. And they had, you know, we had made no movement essentially for 2 years. It took a year and a half just to get a comprehensive proposal from the other side. And you know, I know many of your listeners are aware of how these things often go. Well, I've been in this university for 31 years, and it was just unprecedented in terms of the scope and number of changes. There were more than 250 changes that they had proposed. They basically opened up every single article of our contract, and of course, many of them with which they called operational flexibilities. And at that time, an operational flexibility was cutting your lowest paid faculty by 25% or 20%. That's clearly not operational flexibility. Now, they had these marathon sessions over the last 5 days that concluded last night about 11:35, and they made considerable movement. So we were close. We were hoping that we could resolve the remaining differences. I think that's still a very realistic opportunity. But the state system and the chancellor said at 11:35, this is our last best offer, and we're leaving the table. And so we waited. We had a deadline of 5 a.m. this morning. We waited and looked through some back channels to try and get the governor involved and trying to get some other individuals involved. This represents about 100,000 students that we serve in total. But that was not successful, never came back to the table. So as of 5 a.m. this morning, we've been on strike, and this is the first time in our system. So for me, I've been here 31 years. We've come very close in previous negotiations, but this is the first time that we've ever gone the full distance and have to do this. But it creates a good deal of short-term stress, but we believe in the long run for the quality of education for our students and the welfare of our faculty, it's worth that distress.
Let me ask you, was part of this negotiation process on management side trying to drive a wedge between the full-time professors and the adjuncts?
Correct. I mean, there's been a process of what people in higher education call it an adjunctification of higher education, where
right.
they use part-time temporaries and frequently don't give them benefits. And we have one of the strongest contracts for adjunct faculty. They are on the same salary scale as regular faculty. And they even have opportunities to advance to a regular faculty position. We call them temporary faculty. And so if someone has been rehired 5 years, we think that's no longer should be considered a temporary need. I mean, every university has temporary needs, but no one should have to live their whole career on one-year contracts, you know, trying
right.
to develop a family, you're a professional. It just doesn't work, and it isn't fair. So what they ultimately did in the latest proposal is they took away some of the harshest language towards our temporary or adjunct faculty, but they wanted to put them on a different salary scale. So they're already the lowest paid on the lowest point of our salary, and they want to, in terms of the salary increases, put them on a different trajectory in terms of the proposed cost of living increases over the life of the 4-year contract. So where faculty might be getting 2% or 2.5%, the regular faculty, they are proposing for the temporary faculty, the most vulnerable, the least paid, the least who can afford not keeping up with inflation, they're offering them a 0% the first year, and then a 1%, a 1%, and a 1%. And of course, they'll make the claim that they're overpaid, but we would make, I think, a very credible claim that all the others are extraordinarily underpaid. And,
well, yeah, and let me ask you this. These adjunct professors that are overpaid, is the university overcharging for the overpaid professors? Or no, I didn't think so. Yeah, they're not giving a rebate. Yeah, they're sending it back into the administration. The administration's coffers continues to grow.
Correct.
And I'm sorry, I'm not sending my child to college or university for the administration of that university. I'm sending them there for the education.
For the faculty. That's
yes.
right. So one of the things that has been, you know, again, this is our first experience on the line. And so for everybody, it's a new experience. And it has been, at least I can't speak for all 14 universities, but I can speak for ours that we have been absolutely solid. We have a very strong membership. We have more than 95% of our faculty are members. And there has been a smidgen of suggestion of individuals who may have crossed. So the notion that management has that the university will just continue on, that's what they tell the students, just go to your classes. Well, what we have found is that all the students are out organizing themselves. We didn't do it. They organized themselves. They're out here with their own homemade signs, chanting and supporting their faculty, because that's exactly why they chose these universities. You know, we service oftentimes rural communities, and we service individuals who come from individuals from modest means, who may be very often a very large percentage the first member of their family getting a higher education, and we shouldn't shortchange the quality for them at any way. They deserve the same kind of quality education that people get from private schools and so forth. That's what the responsibility is that we have in the public higher education sector, is to make sure that opportunity is there. No guarantees, but boy, we're going to make sure that you have that opportunity. If you come, you're going to get the kind of quality that others can sometimes experience in other universities who pay considerably more.
Absolutely. Right now we're talking with Mark Cloud of AFSCoF. Mark, I got to tell you, I'm excited to hear that the students are coming out. I've heard rumor that they're even bringing out coffee and donuts, which is, by far and away a wonderful thing.
It is most appreciated.
What is the rest of the community saying? I mean, do they see through the smoke and the vitriol that management's exuding, what's going on there?
It's a difficult audience in that, the town that we live in here, again, I can't speak for all the different towns, but they're often small rural towns. And as I know you are aware that there was a time, and this was a major union town, and I was told just yesterday, my wife happened to be treating a retired faculty member, and he said that when they were about ready to go on strike in the 90s, he said all the local banks offered the faculty free, no-interest loans during the period of the strike. I mean, it was that kind of support that at one time existed. And I think, to the degree to which that the phenomena of having labor organizations to have the problems and be able to grow the way that they should, to give the workers the kind of power that they need in order to have a fair wage. It'd be great if our managers were all fair, and there are plenty of individuals who indeed are very fair and good and so forth, but there's no guarantee. And so when you organize, that gives you a voice, and that's all about having a voice. And I wish more of our neighbors in the community would have that opportunity, or wouldn't have the roadblocks that so often that legislators and others put in their way to prevent them, and the kind of dismissiveness that others give about unions.
Mark, I'm terribly sorry. We've got to get going. We'll get you back in later on this week. Meantime, I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.